Accession number 27814, Mr. David Butt, Real 4. Now, we're talking about your time in the main body, the main camp at HMS Ganges Shore Station, 52 to 53. Now, what was your actual duties as guard commander? You've got a picture of it, and we'll, again, perhaps have a couple of
minutes. Yeah, as guard commander, basically, you just instructed the guard. I mean, you had a lot of training, obviously, quite a few weeks before you actually did the job for that 1 week. I think it was 1 week or 2 weeks, it might have been 2 weeks. And you had to instruct, give all the orders for the guard, present arms and all this sort of thing. And you had your sword and you had to conduct the salute as you marched past the podium of the captain of Ganges, etc. Basically, that was it. You just really, like you see, you know, with any guard, you've got somebody up front giving the orders. So the instructor wasn't there, it was down to you. And the main thing was remembering the order in which you had to do things, because you always formed up in front of the mast for divisions as a guard. And that was the main thing, is just remembering what to do in the right order. So that went okay.
We'll look at more of the routine. You know, we're going through now. One thing that does crop up in the routine, I think it's on a daily basis, that doesn't crop up in the annex is the mast.
Yeah, not a daily basis, a weekly basis.
Weekly, once a week. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, should we do the mast? Because people are always interested in the mast, when you see pictures of it, you can't believe how big it is. Tell us what it was like the before you did it, what training you had, if any, and what it was like for you.
Before you did it, I mean, you look at the mast. I mean, when you first go there, having been shown it from the annex, you know that it's going to come. You know, at some stage you're going to have to do it. And there were boys that relished it, I suppose, because they were the sort of kid that, you know, had always been climbing everywhere and climbing up trees as far as they could go and this type of thing. So they were looking forward to it. The majority, I would say, including myself, thought, yeah, don't really fancy that, you know.
Were you scared of heights at all?
I wouldn't say I'm not. I probably was then. I was then, I think, to start with. I think it's being scared of heights is two things. A, whether you can actually cope with it yourself and rely on yourself to get over the problem. I think this is the thing. The other thing is the ones that are really bad that just can't go up high anywhere for any reason. But that made no difference to the Navy. again, it was before breakfast. Mass. It was once a week, and you had to go up to initially you went through the whole you've probably seen the mast, you've got the cross trees, and you can go up through the hole or you can go out
through the lubber shrouds or out.
To start with, you were allowed to go through. After that, you were told you had to go out. And then you went up that part, and then you went up to the next cross trees, and that was as far as you had to go, and that was in 4 minutes. You had to be down again, formed up within 4 minutes, and if you didn't, you had to do it again. So you weren't given an instruction, really. You were told basically that, you know, hang on.
there was a safety net, though, wasn't there?
There was a safety net, which was, it would have certainly saved you the worst. I would say you would still, in fact, I know for a fact that you would still get injured if you come from high enough, because it's wire. You know, it's large, it's a large mesh, and there's virtually no giving it, or very little giving it. People were injured landing in the safety net, without a doubt. But I wouldn't say that gave you any confidence, the fact that it was there.
Now, what was it like the first time you went up?
Well, the first time was horrendous, really. I mean, you went very slowly and carefully and just travel. The thing was, it was all weathers. I mean, in the winter, you couldn't feel your hands. You know, you just assumed you were hanging on. You could see it, but you couldn't. Your hands were freezing. And you still had to go, and it made no odds. But the first time, yeah, I mean, it's the thought of it as much as anything else. And once you start, you just keep going. And, you know, once you get to the highest point you need to go, there's a sense of relief that you're going to start coming down. But again, when it was really cold weather, that wasn't pleasant either, because it was sometimes frosty on the shrouds, so you were, you know, slipping a bit, and you just had to hang on. You got used to it after a while, but I never enjoyed it. Yeah, that's probably the worst one. Is the first one, apart from when you do go out the first time when it's really cold.
What about going out on the? I forgot what they're called, outward bit.
There's no fun in that. I mean, I think you did have to do it initially. After a while, I think after you've been there a few months, I believe you had the option of going out or through.
Which would you do then?
I think I did go out on the odd occasion, but generally I went through, because I didn't see the point in going out when you could go through anyway, unless you had to.
Did you ever go higher than you had to?
Because I didn't, no.
Some people do, and there's a button boy.
Lots of boys loved it, and they were up there in their spare time. You know, weekends, they would be, you'd see loads of them up the mast. But they actually loved it. And the button boy, I mean, you had a few that always volunteered for that, you know. I say they had absolutely no fear whatsoever of heights, none at all.
But that wasn't for you.
It wasn't for me.
But
no,
you weren't.
No, it wasn't.
There are a whole load of people worse than you, I presume. It sounds like you're in the middle.
I was in the middle, yeah. Oh, there were kids worse than me. They still had to do it. They would take longer than they should. They had to do it again. So, you know, they didn't really gain anything by going slow, but they couldn't do it any other way. You know, they were frightened, basically. Right,
and they didn't get better, didn't get used to it.
They may have got slightly better. I think everybody got slightly better. I'd say some really loved it, but the worst ones, I think, that we really were afraid of heights. I think they got to the stage where they knew they were safe because they were relying on their own efforts, but they still didn't enjoy it, and they weren't going to rush it. Yeah, I think that's about what it boiled down to. But it's not something that I thought of as a pastime for pleasure.
Now, what about other things? I wondered whether you actually did any rifle training, because I know the
name. Yes.
Was that in the second phase?
That was, in Gadget. I mean, you had rifles in the annex just for the marching.
But this is shoot. About learning to shoot?
Yeah, we learned to shoot rifles and pistols at Ganges.
Tell us about that training. How did they do it?
Well, you went through all the safety routine, primarily taking the bits, various bits apart, etc., as you do in any firearms training. You learn how to take it apart, the magazine and the bolts, and etc. I mean, it's the 302s, of course, then, the heavy one. 301. So it was quite a heavy rifle for kids of that age, depending on how big you were. Kids did grow quite a bit at Ganges, I must admit. I did myself. But yeah, I mean, you had the instruction. They taught you the rudiments of firing correctly, you know, squeezing the trigger, etc. How to use the foresight properly. How to aim properly and how not to handle the rifle when you weren't actually shooting, always pointing at the ground. And then they took you to the rifle range, and you took it from there, really. You just did it in groups. And again, you know, if you were particularly good, you could, in fact, do it as a pastime. out of hours and in your leisure time, the little bit of leisure time you had, you did have an option of doing whatever you wanted to do in the way of sports and that sort of thing, in the odd leisure time that you had. It was probably only one afternoon a week, I think, for a couple of hours, and weekends where you weren't allowed out, quite a lot of weekends you weren't allowed out anyway, and then you had choice of, what you wanted to do, go and play football, cricket or rugby, whatever. But yeah, you had the rudiments of learning.
Were you a decent shot with either the rifle or the pistol's difficult, isn't it?
Pistol I only did once, because they only, I think they only took us twice, and the second time I think I was put as a safety guard. You had to go on top of the hill, the red flag, and just warn people, you know, not to come anywhere near the range. So I didn't actually get to shoot that day, so I only did it once with pistols. Didn't really get a chance to get into it to know whether I was any good or not. Rifles, I was average. I was okay.
Did you wear glasses then? Or not,
no,
I presume.
Oh, no,
yeah.
No, I didn't wear glasses till long after I left the Navy, just as well. Yeah, so it was, yes, I mean, I can't recall how often we went shooting. Not that often, I don't think.
Now, what about, we'll come to the signal training, I don't know, I presume you started that there.
Yeah.
What about seamanship, though? I mean, what, you know, we'll do that first.
Yeah, seamanship, you did basics in seamanship, real basics, i.e. your knots. Everybody had to do their knots. You had a set of knots to do, which again you had to finish officially before you left Ganges, and I must admit a lot of people didn't, and I don't think I did. There were some really fancy ones, you know, which served no purpose other than decoration.
I wondered about the point of knots, and I also wondered if you did splices, which actually...
Yeah, splices, knots and splices, all combined, yeah. And that's where some of the fancy ones came in, because your hammock and that, you had to have your various splicing, and of course it's all tradition, and seamen on the rare occasion had to use them, you know, later in their career.
Was it just rope, or was it cable splicing as well?
No, seamen did cable,
but you didn't.
We did rope. Being signals, you had to splice halyards regularly, because they did fray and break, and so that was something. But actual fancy knots and whipping, you had to do the whipping.
What's whipping? Sorry.
Well, that's sort of tidying up the splice. You sort of, and then pull it tight, and it gives a neat finish, which is quite simple. In fact, I've used that, you know, myself. It's quite useful on occasions. And splicing I've used at home. But no, the fancy ones was, I think it was just an exercise in getting you to use certain skills. And again, some kids took to it like, you know, water off a duck's back. Others struggled, and some of them liked doing it so much they would do kids. Others, you know, for them.
Was it all still based on the seamanship manual? They used to have a Bible that they all had. I mean, are you still using that?
Yeah, we're still using the seamanship manual, yeah. But as signals, we only did very basic seamanship, really.
So what did you do? You did knots and splices. What about boxing the compass? I don't even know if they still did that then.
No, we didn't do boxing the compass. We did boats, of course.
Tell us about boats. Which sort?
Cutters and whalers. And that was compulsory. And again...
So that's basically rowing, isn't it?
It was rowing. Yeah, and sailing. Rowing was the bit you had to do regularly. And you had competitions, again, between divisions. I was quite happy with that. Again, it was all weathers.
Had you done rowing before?
No. Messed about, I think, on boating lakes, yeah, that's all, but it's not the same, not quite the same, because you only have one oar in a cutter or a whaler, as normally you'd have two in a small rowing boat. But yeah, I mean, it was all weathers again, so it wasn't a particularly popular a lesson in the winter.
What about sailing? Is that the whalers?
Sailing was whalers primarily, yeah. Yeah, you've got the rudiments of sailing. We got the rudiments of sailing being in signals. I think seamen had more in that aspect because they did have to use it on occasions in later life if motorboats broke down or anything. But yeah, I mean, we learnt the rudiments of sailing, but it was, again, something you could take up if you wanted to in your own time. And to a degree, I wish I had. So I think it was something I would like to have done later on. You could actually get qualifications as a boy coxswain. I never did. A few did. It was just a few, I think, went that far.
What else was seamanship then? So the boats, is there knots?
It was a knot, so it was throwing the heaving line.
Tell us about that. They're still using it, were they?
They're still using it. I think they're probably still using them now. It wouldn't surprise me. In later days, they started using a rifle with a rod. But, yeah, and the heaving line. I mean, again, seamen had to do it constantly as part of their ongoing training. Seamen only did a year, of course, at Ganges. Signalmen did 18 months. But we were taught how to throw it, but we didn't take part in competitions, etc. That was all down to seamen.
And what exactly was heaving the line? I mean,
it's just a finish rope like a halyard, fairly thin, with a large what do they call it, Turk's head knot on the end, which was quite heavy, and it's used just to throw across from ship to ship or ship to shore, because that throws easily and accurately if you've been trained to use it. And then they just tie it onto a larger rope or wire or whatever, and that was used, say, throughout my career in the Navy all the time, although they were using rifles on occasions.
Anything else? Rules of the road, that sort of, I mean...
Rules of the road, I think. You did get basic navigation because you had to use it as signals. I don't think we really got much compass training amongst that. It was really rules of the road as regards shipping lanes and this type of thing, buoys, colours of buoys and their uses, lights, buoy lights, etc., number of flashes, all this type of thing. But yeah, it was a very rudimentary seamanship where you might need it, even if you weren't in the seaman's branch.
Just to give you an idea then, really, of that, an introduction to this.
An introduction to it, and so that you wouldn't be completely lost if somebody says, oh, and lifeboats, of course, if you were told, go man the lifeboat, you knew exactly how to do that, etc. I mean, that was a must for
Did you
everybody.
Actually do lifeboat drill?
Yes.
What was lifeboat drill?
Well, that was again down in the boat, on the boat pier, as they called it. And they had lifeboats on davits on the pier. So you did the full lifeboat drill on occasions. I can't remember whether you did it every time you went on a boating instruction or not. I don't think so. You were told how to do it, and then you did a refresher drill from time to time. I think that was it, really, on the use of the stretchers, this type of thing, you know. Again, just in case you ended up, you know, getting thrown in the deep end and told, you know, you've got to go and man a lifeboat.
What about damage control? Was that
damage control? Yes, that was part of the training. That was civil defence training as well. yeah, it was quite an interesting bit in that. But yeah, damage control. What we had to do there, basic damage control of looking for problems after an explosion or things like that. But then we had a full exercise of shoring up shipside, which had been blown in. And you went into this vast tank with a few feet of water in it, probably up to about your waist. And then there was a hole in the side, and they started pumping water through the hole, and you had to use whatever was around, and it was basically mattresses and bits of timber and things. You had to shore up this hole while the instructors were throwing thunder flashes at you into the water, you know, all the time, just to make it realistic. So that was, again, you got the basic training on how to do it all, and then you were thrown into to a full practical exercise, but only the once, I think, on that. So that was a must. Fire training, of course. That was the hilarious bit. You had to. We went out to a field, and they had various vats of fire, or great big vats of water with oil on the top, this sort of thing. And dotted around the field were these little braziers where they took the flame from to light the others, you know. And our chip pan fire, they showed you that one as well. And of course, we were all grouped there watching this chip pan. And you know, the usual thing is never throw water on a fire, on a light chip pan thing. And of course, straight away, the instructor did it. He threw a bucket of water straight over this pan of oil, and of course it went woof, you know, and everybody moved back. Unfortunately, I moved back into one of these braziers, which tipped, went down my trousers and caught a light, and I was running around the field with this with my trousers alight, and everybody else was laughing, you know. And I ended up rolling on the grass to put it out. I didn't burn myself, actually, it was only the trousers, but yeah, I'll never forget that, that's for sure. But nobody thought it was dangerous, they just thought it was hilarious. But yeah, I mean, all that sort of training was part and parcel of what you might need at some later stage. And we had a civil defence course.
Now tell me about that. Why did you have to do that?
Well, that was basically giving you an insight, supposedly, into what was being done in the country. It wasn't really a lot to do with the Navy, to be honest. It was, you know, it was how the defences, etc., were set up around the country. And remember our instructor always saying, nothing will ever get through to this country because of the barrier that's all the way around the coast. Now, nobody really knew what this barrier he was talking about. You know, we thought it was some magic thing, you know, that nothing could fly through it or whatever. Of course, what he was really talking about was radar, but he never actually said it. So we were all a bit baffled all by this. Eventually found out what he was talking about. But so it was just really an insight, and you did fire training again as part of it, really just to give you an idea of what the country as a whole was doing in the way of defending, you know, the home front, if you like. But although it was wartime finished, of course, even then.
I think the next thing is probably start with your signal training. How did this, because that's what you were there for. Now, were you going to be a visual signaller or a wireless signaller? You know, there's all different sorts of
signals. Well, that's right. Well, again, because my uncle was in visual signals, I decided that that's what I would do. He always said it was fine, you know, quite enjoyed it. So what they did was they took you on your very first initiation into signals. I mean, first of all, you said whether you wanted to be a seaman or a signalman. That was without any really guidance whatsoever. And if you said you wanted to be in signals, they took you to this aptitude test, basically, and they gave you a bit of Morse by radio and a bit of Morse by light, and obviously very slow speeds, and you just read it if you could. They gave you a chart, etc., of what it all meant, what the Morse code was, and you just read it if you could and wrote down these various bits. And at the end of the session, if you could do it all right, both the light and the sound, you made your choice. You say, I want to be visual, I want to be radio. there were the odd ones who couldn't really do it at all, and they were told, "You're seaman," full stop, and that was it. So really, that was it, and then your training started virtually straight away.
And you were going to be visual. You passed the aptitude.
I decided to be visual. Yeah, yeah.
Now, how did they start training you as a visual signaller?
Basically, because visual signalman is you've got the Morse code by light, you've got semaphore, you've got flags.
Well, let's do them one by one. Morse code firstly, because that's the best known.
Morse
this
code
is flags, not the da 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 on the road.
No, it's with a flashing light. Yeah, a flashing light. So that's what they would do. You would have a light up a mast.
This is the oldest light, or the
No, they would start with a fixed light. Up a mast, which is just like a large globe, if you like, which was on all ships anyway. It's just the same. And
so you knew where to look.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Now, how did you take to it? Because I mean, I'm not so familiar with people learning Morse by light.
I took to Morse by light very easily. I don't know how easily I would have taken it by sound, and it never struck me as I had the same aptitude by sound as by light, but I found Morse by light very simple to learn. Once you learn your Morse code, I found it very easy to read, and I could read it virtually 100%.
Up to what
every
speed?
Time.
It's words by minute, isn't it, usually?
Yeah, you could probably get up to about 20 by light.
That's reading. What about sending?
Sending, yeah, again. Much the same speed. You wouldn't always send that speed. You'd have to send it the speed of the recipient, really. If you kept coming back, well, not acknowledging each word, then you'd slow down. So you'd sort of start quicker, and then if they could read it, fine. Otherwise, you'd go back down again. I could read it at virtually whatever speed they sent it normally by light, and there is only a certain speed you can send it anyway because of the depth of the key. It's got a certain amount of movement, not like a Morse radio Morse key where it's very fine. Yeah, that's a big difference.
Did everyone take to it? Or did some
various speeds, yeah. Various.
At what point would you be no good? I mean, 15 or 10 or words per minute? Or?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I forget what the pass mark was. It was much lower than you could actually necessarily read it. I mean, they obviously wanted to get people through, and as long as you could read it, your speed would pick up, you know, with practice, and you use it a hell of a lot anyway. I mean, I'm not too sure what the pass was. I think it was about 12. Something like that. All the kids got through it eventually.
So that's Morse.
Yeah.
Now, semaphore.
Semaphore. I found that more difficult.
Now, this is... How was it sent, semaphore? I mean, is it with flags and men waving?
Yeah,
or
yeah.
It's not the ones that they developed?
Oh, those stupid things. No, everybody hated those.
Did they have them still? It's an automatic system.
Yeah, they weren't on ships. They did have them ashore in some places, I think, because they could be much bigger. Yeah, they could be seen.
But that's irrelevant for you.
Yeah.
So you learned
it. We never use them. No,
with flags.
People with, yeah. Because that's what you had to do, so it was obviously easier or preferable to watch it being made that way. And I did find it more difficult. Not difficult to learn. I found it easy enough to learn. I still know semaphore now. I did find it difficult initially to learn to read at any speed, but never to send. I found I could send it accurately at whatever speed I needed to. But to read it at speed, I found
quite
difficult. What was that, do you think? I don't know. I had a sort of mental blockage with it for some reason. And I did fail initial exam on that and had to take it again.
Did it just come eventually, or did you always have
it came, but I was never comfortable with it. I don't know why. Mind you, it wasn't used as much.
I was going to say, did they use it much?
They didn't use it as much. I mean, I think that was part of the problem. generally it was by light. Semaphore was used if you were in close company, and it was normally to one ship to ship, not to a group. In harbour, funnily enough, later on in life, I did have to send semaphore to the fleet.
We'll come.
Yeah, that comes later.